Wrestling fans, there's a podcast you will want to add to your podcast playlist. Wrestling with the Willies, hosted by Josh and his brothers, and they discuss all things wrestling, like WWE Extreme Rules, WWE SummerSlam, and more. You'll get the results and their reactions on all the matches you want to know more about, as well as in-depth analysis, opinions, and fallout from the events on Raw and SmackDown. Wrestling with the Willies talk about all the wrestlers you know and follow, their matches, moves, losses, and their achievements. Add Wrestling with the Willies to your podcast playlist right now. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Amazon Podcast, Google Podcast, and your favorite podcast platform.
Welcome back to the chilling depths of Scream Creeps, where every shiver and shadow comes alive in your headphones. I'm your host, Jeremy, and I'm here with my brothers again, Aaron and Josh, guiding you through the darkest corners of cinematic horror. Tonight, we delve deep into a film that not only unnerved audiences worldwide, but also claimed its spot as the eighth scariest movie of 2020, according to the pulse rates of those who dared to watch it. Grab your comfort blanket and leave the lights on as we explore the psychological depths and eerie brilliance of the Babadook. Stay with us, if you dare, as we unravel the mysteries of Mr. Babadook and the haunting journey that transforms grief into terror. Let's get creeped out together.
I was hoping you'd do the "let's get creepy."
Yeah, I know. I thought about it.
That one was good.
That should be like the tagline from now on. It's just "let's get creepy."
Let's do
it. Yeah. Make a t-shirt. Just "let's get creepy."
Yeah. All right, let me start out by saying, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, brother. I don't know how this is at number eight.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I'm trying to figure it out too.
But
whose heart rate was going so high, like higher than 120 beats per minute in this movie? It was snooze fest.
Okay, yeah, you might as well go through the stuff first.
Then. Yeah, I was just gonna say
I was so excited to get that out. I didn't even want to wait.
Yeah.
Okay.
So normally I finish. Well, normally I normally talk about that at the end, but with us talking about this, I'll go ahead and go through it now. So, as we've said before on the podcast, the average resting heart rate in this study was 65 beats per minute for everybody that was watching the movies throughout the study. The average movie heart rate for The Babadook was actually 80 beats per minute. So it was actually higher than all of the other ones that we've watched so far, average-wise. The highest spike was actually 116 beats per minute. So it was actually one of the highest so far.
How? Doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and with us watching it, I have the same opinion. I'm like, I don't really grasp. I don't know who they had at this point. I'm like trying to figure out who they had in this study.
And we were talking about, Scream 5 on this podcast, right? I'm pretty sure.
Not on the top 35.
No, I'm just saying, on the channel, we've talked about the movie
on the podcast.
So I only want to mention this because, like, during the first, like, 5 minutes or 10 minutes of the thing, they do a phone call. What's your favorite scary movie? She's like, some subversive, like, The Babadook. I'm like, how would anybody say that this is their favorite? I just don't. I'm like, when I watched this, I got severely bored. Like, so bored to the thing where I kept watching the time to see how long the movie had left until I was done watching it. I did it like 8 times. Especially the first 20 or 30 minutes.
Let me hold off and let me go through the stats first, and then we can.
I was like, you didn't even go through the
cast.
We've been called mannequins because of the intros Jeremy does, and we're so stone faced this time. No, okay, not happening.
So the movie, and I mentioned it in the last podcast, but the movie is a 2014 Australian horror film, and it was written and directed by Jennifer Kent in her feature directorial debut, based on her 2005 short film called The Monster. Oh, it's not The Monster, it's just Monster. It stars Essie Davis, Noah Weissman, Daniel Henshaw, Haley McKellany, Barbara West, and Ben Winspear. And the film follows a widowed single mother who, with her son, must confront a mysterious humanoid monster in their house. Kent began writing the screenplay back in 2009, intending to explore parenting, grief, and the fear of madness. Financing was secured through the Australian government grants and partly through crowdfunding. Filming took place in Adelaide, where Kent drew from her experiences as a production assistant on Dogville, which was made by Lars von Trier. And during filming, the production team worked to ensure that six-year-old Weissman was protected from the film's disturbing subject matter. And the monster and special effects were created with stop-motion animation and practical effects. The Babadook premiered at the Sundance Film Festival on January 17, 2014, and was given a limited release in Australian cinemas on May 22nd of the same year. And initially failing to produce a commercial success in its native country. However, it generated wider attention internationally, and it grossed $10 million against its $2 million budget. The film was praised for its performances, of the cast, the creature design, the premise, and the themes. And I guess at the AACTA Awards, it won Best Film, which is the Australian Academy of Cinema and Television Arts Awards. So, and Kent won for Best Direction and Best Original Screenplay. So, and I guess it has become a cult classic, Josh. This might be partly, but I guess it was popular as an internet meme. I'm not sure
if I've ever seen the meme on this fucking show. I'm like, on this movie.
But the term is actually an invention of the director. It's improvised from the Serbian word for boogeyman, which was Baba Roga.
I figured that's what she was trying to do. Yeah.
But with that being said, I mean, I'm not going to go too much into anything else outside of that, because most of it's just, you know, I guess it was an exploration of parenting from a real perspective was the goal. But
I think it's dealing with grief, like with the loss of people, depression, and everything else. It's just like, to me, like both characters I didn't really care for. Like,
the interesting
especially
part,
the kid, the first like 30 or 40 minutes of just the kid whining was annoying the shit out of me.
But one thing I wanted to point out, though, we just did in the last podcast, we talked about the movie The Descent, and both of these movies started out with somebody being killed in a car accident. So, I mean, it's, you know, in this one, that was how the husband died and left her widowed and single, was he died in a car accident. And then The Descent, it was basically the same thing, that Sarah, the main character in that film, her husband died in a car accident. So it's very interesting that we're reviewing these two movies back to back pretty much, and they both revolve around somebody passing away due to a car wreck.
Coincidence.
And then a story.
I find it funny. What did she say? Something about like family dealing with trauma after
her intention of the film is that to explore parenting, grief, and the fear of madness.
Okay.
So, I guess being said, going mad based on the fact that she had to parent a kid by herself.
This kid was kind of blown out of the water by the ending.
Yeah.
They manufactured. It would have been great if they said that if the Babadook was a fiction, like a figment of their imagination.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they actually, at the end, spoiler alert, like she was feeding this thing and it wasn't dead and or imaginary, was more like this thing was making her traumatized, not the trauma of her dead husband and having to raise her son. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that was the thing. It was like, at first, you know, the kid was made, it almost, I'm trying to remember or think about what movie it reminds me of, but, you know, the kid was viewed as a bad kid for most of it. And
he was just
like not, you know, like he couldn't take care of, and he pushed that girl, but there was no perception on why he pushed her. The girl was being kind of a little brat to him, so he like reacted like a kid would. It just happened to be they were in like a spot above ground, right? But a lot of kids that age especially would probably push the other kid just in a reaction like, leave me alone, especially if they're not listening to him. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, but the other mom was like, you need to take care of your kid, your kid's weird, kept saying that throughout the movie.
Yep.
But and I mean, from an outsider looking in, he probably would look a little weird, but that's where it's almost like sometimes I wonder why, and I wouldn't tell the story, but I always wonder why they never like explain that to people. Like, you know, why don't you shut up? You know, he's dealt with, you know, his dad died in a car wreck, so he's handling it the way of how a 6-year-old or however old he is would be handling things.
Yeah. Well, you know, not only 6-year-old, but a 6-year-old boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the aunt, because that's her sister, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, the aunt is saying your boy is weird, and then the daughter is mimicking what the mom is saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like, of course he probably is weird to a little girl. When we were children, we were weird to girls.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, yeah, this is coming from a mom's perspective and her sister, which if the father was around, those things wouldn't be said. He would probably act differently. So, I mean, I can see what the intention was when she said that about, hell, I keep forgetting what you said, but I don't know.
The parenting grief and the fear of madness.
Like this, yeah. The psychology of it all. But it's like, it's really hard to when I didn't enjoy the movie. There was nothing. Mm-hmm. The acting was great.
The cinematography was cool. She
was really good. The Amelia Venick, the one that played that, Essie, I think is her name. Her acting was phenomenal. And same with the little kid. His was too. Like, if they intended on him being an annoying.
Well, Elaine walked in the room, and I can tell you, it reminded her of the dude from the kid from The Shining. Red Rum.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what he said. The kid was creepy. Like, just watching the few parts that she saw of the movie. Like, she came in parts while I was watching it. And she's like, that kid is creepy. And this is just literally minutes of her seeing this kid on screen. So,
yeah,
he did his job. And she was kind of just, you know, she did her work through most of it. Then she became really near the, when she got, you know, more involved in the whole Babadook thing, that's when it became like she did even more of an acting job. yeah. in the movie. I'm talking about S.E. Davis.
It was good. Yeah. I mean, it was good acting. So, but I just couldn't get connected with it because, I mean, I think the character itself, there was a lot of elements that I just didn't hit for me, and I didn't enjoy it. But the fact that it's in this placement, even if it was one below where it is, like how in the world?
I don't understand how this was scary even. About
And that's what I said. And this almost seems like it's a. Because it was not known, people got hyped up almost like they didn't know what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not necessarily what happened in the film. It was like there was a nervousness wondering what was going to happen, you know, because that's kind of where I came into the movie because I didn't really know what the hell the movie was about. So it was like watching it. I'm going, okay, what's going to happen? It was boring to me. Like you guys are saying, like, I was expecting stuff to happen and it just wasn't. And then near the end, it was like, okay, why did that happen? You know? And then, okay, so it was just a book. And then all of a sudden at the end, there's an apparition involved. And
I'm thinking that the Babadook was a version of her depression, trauma, whatever, that she was trying to keep. And like, you know how like most people with depression takes depression meds and stuff like that to keep it at bay. That's what it seemed like that they were trying to imply, was that she was finally getting control over all the stuff with him passing, how she has to do this by herself, all that stuff. Like, it felt like that's what it was. And it was like the manifestation was in this Babadook character to me. But, like, well, I just didn't really care for it. I just couldn't.
Well,
I thought I was going to like it, and then I just didn't.
Yeah, the other part it kind of reminds me of is, Aaron, I don't know if he's seen it, but the movie Smile. Kind of reminded me of that stuff because, you know, like when the glass shards were found in her food and she blamed the sun for it. And the sun's like, well, it's the Babadook doing it. Well, anybody would go, who the fuck's the Babadook? Like, what do you mean the Babadook's doing it? Smile was kind of like that throughout most of the movie. Like, it looked like she was doing all this shit, but she was kind of being driven to do a lot of the stuff that was happening. Yeah. And all of them were involved in the whole situation. That was a really good movie, by the way. We reviewed it. We reviewed that here on the podcast.
And we'll probably do Smile 2 when it comes out.
Yeah, the second one's coming out.
Well, there's going to be a second one?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be a second one.
I loved the first one. It was one of the best horror movies that I've
watched. I'm wondering if it's going to be towards the dude, though. Because I don't think they've revealed anything for the movie yet.
No, I've read it's a completely different person.
Oh, so it's like a different person. Okay.
Yeah, it's some actress or whatever, but it's like, it's not even tied in. It's the only tie is the nature of what's occurring.
Yeah.
But is what I've read anyways. But needless to say, what I'm saying is it kind of points to all this stuff happening and it being blamed on the sun, and then come to find out it's an actual thing and it's driving everybody to do the stuff themselves. It's just like the stuff being in the book showing her that she's going to be doing this stuff, and then later she's doing all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know, so
worst part of the movie when she killed the dog.
Yeah. I was going to say when she,
I was just like, Bugsy. Okay. Did they really have to do that? I was like,
well, again, they foreshadowed in the book. You knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
That was kind of what I was saying before, is they showed that in the book. You knew that stuff was going to happen later on. And so when you saw the dog and she's walking towards the dog, you knew she was killing the dog at that point. And you knew exactly how she was going to do it because the book showed it. So it was so that was the one thing. And like you said, it's like you until the end, it was like, okay. All that stuff is going on. It's like, okay, here's the next thing. And then they, you know, I don't know. She locks the door to the basement. And then
she feeds them worms.
Yeah.
You know, because like, so the Babadook lives off of worms now.
Yeah.
I was just okay.
They kind of alluded to it that the Babadook tried to attack her, but she was able to
withstand.
She gave it worms and it stopped, you know, so it was like, but
I mean,
overall,
was that supposed
to
be a metaphor for her battling depression?
That's what I was, that's what it seemed like to me.
The whole time, and you have to feed it a little bit.
Yeah.
Keep it at bay. That's a horrible metaphor.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what, and that's where I was saying, I think the movie was kind of alluding to some stuff that, and I don't know if I said that. I think that might have said that in the last podcast, that there's stuff that's thrown into movies that they hope you pick up, that if you don't, kind of fuck up the way movies come out at the end. You know, it's like, if you don't pick up on these things that they're throwing out, the movie may be like, what the hell did I just watch? And I think that's what this is, one of those movies, because it's a psychological type thing that it's like, if you're not really grasping what the hell they're trying to say in this whole thing,
then you're gonna really
like,
fully
it
understand
just looks
it,
like
yeah.
Well, yeah, and from this perspective, you see what I saw the entire movie was this kid was viewed as a brat, and even mom viewed him as a brat up to a certain point, and then she could not withstand all the pressure to go along with that and
started breaking. Yeah. Or broke.
And and then instead of fixing it, she just went along with what was going on and kind of put that at bay for now. And that's where the locking it in the basement was kind of like you were saying, the metaphor for keeping that shit behind you, or, you know, where we've talked about in the past, holding shit in. It's kind of like that's her way of holding it in, is locking it in the basement, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not totally going away, but she's pushing it down there for now, and then every once in a while she's got to feed it worms. Or, you know, it's just a...
Yeah, but didn't she say... No, I guess that was just me. I thought...
It's because
thought
it was like
something about him having to... No,
he was saying at one point that he would be able to go see it at one point, or that he could feed it to, or something.
Yeah, I thought that's what she said.
Yeah, I thought that's what she was saying. She was like, not yet, or something like that.
You know what I mean? I was like, okay. That's why I didn't take... I took it as there. She literally has this thing in her basement.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah, but it was like the metaphor for the shit that, like you were saying, like the stuff they were both dealing with.
The and trauma and everything.
It manifested into this creature for both of them. And it started off with him, and then it overtook her over time, because she was dealing with not only the son's stuff, but her own stuff. So it overtook her at the same time. So I think it can kind of be looked at at this, but, you know, instead of killing the damn thing, they just kept it around.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No, that actually all makes a lot more sense, because, I mean, that would explain why the Babadook is visiting her as as himself, stuff like that.
Yeah, because I mean, from that perspective, earlier in the movie, with the when the apparition of the husband appeared, saying that bring the boy to him. So it's like that was the pressure that she had, was the boy. So it was almost like if
she
you
was thinking
relinquish
in her head
that,
if she would just kill the boy.
If you relinquish that, then everything goes away, and she's like, I don't want to do that, basically. And, you know, so it's like, you know, but it all started with the boy, because she never saw the Babadook before the boy did.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, that's where I was saying, like, it started on the boy and then moved on to her as the pressure. It seemed to me as the pressure mounted, because more stuff started happening over time. And that's where I think, you know, when you listen to what the director said, where she said, exploring what we've talked about a couple of times, explore parenting grief and the fear of madness. That kind of relates to that, in that she was parenting the kid by herself that was dealing with grief on his own, but she was also dealing with it. And then she was starting to go crazy because of all this shit her son was doing around. So she's like going, what the hell's going on? And then it just started to overtake her, and she broke at that point where she let him in. And that's where it's like, it could be a metaphor for, like you said earlier, the aspect of depression and when you finally hit that breaking point, or anything, when you hit that breaking point. And it was just a manifestation of it. But I don't know.
That's why I said the way. I understand what she was trying to do, but
it's too deep for me for a horror flick.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking about that.
Yeah, and that's where I was saying, I think that was the issue that I had for it, is I had to think about the movie.
You're not just reading between three lines, you know? No. You're reading between 16 of them.
Yeah.
And so what
I want to see is, like, from a horror movie, for the most part, is like what we get out of Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th or even Halloween. I don't necessarily know terrifying. If I want to. Yeah. Well, from a horror movie, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine the way the third one's going to be if the dude that plays him puked on set. So,
I need to have Aaron watch it, too. I don't think he's watched either of the films.
I haven't watched either one, man.
Yeah.
Worst scene I've ever seen was in the second one. And supposedly the third one has an even worse scene in it.
Well, and I'm not surprised. The way that they end up having a bunch of clowns, like, it seems like nothing. Like, everything's off limits.
But so, I can tell you, if a dude, that's what I always said, that's the problem with him. Dad wouldn't. That's why he doesn't like horror movies, man, is because they've gotten realistic now. I know he talks about that all the time, is that you don't need all the blood and the stabbing and the realistic cutting things off. But, you know, that's what they've moved to. In our case, I think they have to do that to be even
worthwhile anymore. Yeah, like for us, the shockers or whatever. Yeah.
These movies aren't even hitting our heart rate meters because we're expecting.
Like I said, I was so bored with this movie. I watched the damn time like 8 or 9 times. It was like, oh, okay, it's only an hour and a half. Okay, that's not bad. And then I'm like, oh, 30 minutes in? Damn, it seems slow. Oh, 50 minutes in? Man, when is this over? That's all I was doing the whole time, because I was just not certain bits and pieces looked cool. I liked how, like, it showed her, like, going to sleep, and they did the top angle where it looked like they did it where they were standing, and then she kind of just fell into the bed, which I thought was cool, and then certain other shots looked cool, but I just couldn't care for this. Like, I could respect what they were doing with it. It just fell flat with me. I just didn't like it at all.
Maybe we're just too dumb for this movie.
Or it's way too complicated for a movie, maybe?
Yeah, I wouldn't say. I don't know if it was too dumb. I think it's more along the lines of, you don't want to, like I said earlier, I think it's you want to watch it and be scared.
Yeah.
Not necessarily have to think about what the hell's going on during the movie or understand what the premise is behind it. It's like, this is one of those horror movies that are meant for the Oscar type things, or was trying to be an Oscar nominated thing, because there's like psychological stuff that you have to think about and tie it to and things like that. But I don't know. I could be reading completely wrong into it, but
totally.
I definitely know that my heart rate definitely did not hit probably even 80.
If anything, mine fucking went down. Like, because I was just,
it'd be
like,
interesting one day to actually take a heart rate monitor and watch these and see what our heart rate actually hit.
Oh, yeah, see our basis on it. Yeah,
you know, see, like, I'm sure that
Terrifier 2 like hit it for me, dude.
I say it all the time, but, you know, my heart rate may go freaking weird when I don't even know. Watching these things.
Yeah.
So it's like
very true.
So, you know, anyways, but So in the next podcast, it would be number 7 on the list of the scariest movies in 2020, but we already actually reviewed Conjuring 2 on this podcast already, so I think it would behoove us not to talk about it again in the terms of being the scariest movie, because we've already kind of given our opinions on it. So with that being said, I think we're going to review A Quiet Place 2 in place of Conjuring 2, because actually in 2021, A Quiet Place Part 2 was number 8 on the list. So I can actually give the stat line for that, because it actually falls right in line with where we're at currently. Even though we're at number 7, but the numbers tie out. And it was actually number 9 in 2022. So, So with that being said, we'll go ahead and watch A Quiet Place 2 for everybody and review that for next time. And then at number 6, it will be the movie It Follows. So with that,
I'm intrigued for It Follows. I haven't seen that yet. I bought it a while ago because I figured we were going to talk about it.
Yeah, then after that, we'll be in the top 5 of this study, which that's when they kind of get ramped up quite a bit. So, for all of those that made it to the 30-minute mark of this podcast, I hope you guys enjoyed it. And if you guys are enjoying the content and you haven't liked and subscribed to our channel yet, we would love to have you guys. And you can hit that bell to get notified when our new videos come out. But for all of us listening on your favorite podcast platform, if you haven't subscribed on whichever one that is, we're available on pretty much every single one of them at this point, whether that be Apple Podcasts or Spotify or, it's not Google Podcasts anymore. I think they stopped Google, so it's moved over to YouTube. I'm trying to think. What other ones are out there?
Podcasting,
but yeah, things. we're out on all of them, and then all of our content is out on our website, theheartofgeek.com. Everything we've talked about, our podcasts, our YouTube videos, everything, all of our stream content is out there as well. So, for myself, Josh, and Aaron, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Scream Creeps, and we'll see you in the next one. See ya.
Love you, bye.